How's it going? And welcome to episode 47 of On The Wire, proud member of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. And of course, if you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me on the Twitter at 80 grade. That's all spelled out. And I am not being joined by my regular co-host, Kevin Hastings, who you should still be following on the Twitter at Hastings Kevin. Kevin is experiencing some high wind turbulence in West Texas, as one does every once in a while. So he'll be back with us next week. But for now, I am lucky enough to have with me a very special guest to fill the shoes, and that's Mr. David Mendelson. I will be referring to you as Mendy the rest of the show, because that is just what everybody knows you as, Mendy. You should be following him on the Twitter at dmendy02. And of course, he is the co-founder of tripleplayfantasy.com. There you can listen to him hosting the Triple Play Fantasy baseball and football shows while reading his written word on the site, along with regular contributions on both Fantrax and Fantasy Pros. And that is a new gig from what I understand as well. So congratulations on that, Mendy. We're going to spend some time getting your thoughts on hitters, mostly hitters that we'll be thinking about targeting to stream throughout the season. Yes, you can stream hitters throughout the season. It's not just pitchers, and how that might influence shallow league drafts. But first, Mendy, thank you so much for coming on the show. And
I'm doing good, man. We talked right before we went on and we said how important a good introduction is for the guests, and you crushed it, man. I feel welcome. I feel at home, and I'm pumped to be talking hitting with you. Just me and you talking some streaming hitters and some good stuff. So thanks again for having me, and I'm pumped to be getting started here.
Yeah, cool, man. I'm gonna put you on the spot a little bit, Zon, in here, because I am curious to know a little bit more about, you know, something I thought about doing on the show is, like, typically we talk about things with our guests where I feel as though they specialize in, or at least they feel the most comfortable in. I wouldn't bring Nick Pollock on the show and talk hitting, put it that way, and he would be appreciative of that. But my question to you, and we talked about this in the regular season last year with Lauren Auerbach of Fantrax, but, like, you obviously are managing multiple sports throughout the year, and you're giving advice and you're doing podcasts on football, baseball. I'm going to ask you the simple question first. Why?
Why the multiple sports?
Yeah. And that's just me coming from I play in a three sport league, and it's fun. I love it. I like it a lot. But I have a co-manager in that, Adam Sloat. Shout out to Adam Sloat. He does all the football work for me, and I appreciate that. And we share some of the basketball stuff, and I played all the different sports, but I spent almost exclusively nowadays, but like 85 to 90% of my time, it's all baseball. So how do you manage your own mentality to make sure that you're giving the best advice in all the different sports that you are providing information on?
It definitely gets very hard at times, where for multiple reasons. One, if I feel like I'm tweeting too much of one sport, and I feel like I'm neglecting the people that want to see advice for other sport, like the other sport I'm doing, I feel like that regret that I'm not doing enough of that. And then there's learning two different sets of players, and when all this new data and stuff's coming out for different sports, I have to be on top of it for both. And I'll be honest, there's times I'm like, I should just pick one and just do it. But the reality is I love both. They're my 1A and my 1B. Like, I would miss the other if I didn't do it. And so I like when football's done and it's like baseball, all baseball. And then as baseball season's winding down and football's starting, it's like, all right, like, I'm going all in on football. And then there's that in between where I do a little, like right now I'm doing a little bit of both, but it's a grind. It's definitely a lot of work. And I'm sure I could be a better analyst if I did just one, but I don't think I would have as much fun if I did.
There you go.
One.
That's really what we're here for. We're here to have whatever our definition of fun is. That is what we're here to do. Yeah, we saw all those scheduled tweets go out on Sunday night that said it's baseball season now.
Yeah.
Last Sunday, as you're listening to this. And of course, it was very awkward for most of those tweets. We are where we are, unfortunately. All right, let's get right into it. We are going to continue with a typical segment that we call moving targets here. So we are into a section of the draft season. And as we like to say, draft season started back in October. But we're at a section of draft season now that people are starting to look at drafting their actual fab leagues. They're stepping away from the draft and holds and the best balls, where you don't really have to do much in-season work besides set your lineups in the draft and hold, and move into those fab leagues where you actually, you know, have to make your moves. And obviously, these aren't 50 rounders. we're using the example of 30 rounders in the NFBC style, and many, I'm looking at players that you would be or have considered drafting at the very end of these. They could be 12 teamers, 15 teamers, what have you. But the, of course, the rules that we say here is they have to be currently going at ADP of 350 in the NFBC league. So these are players that are regularly available in the final five rounds of a typical 30 round draft that are good flyers, they're dart throws, whatever you want to call them. They very well might be your first drops in the first fab period at the end of March before the season starts, or you could hit gold and you could have them on your team all season long. You got a couple names here. So why don't you pick one and then I'll jump on my guys and I'll let you get the other two off your chest in a minute. So pick your favorite one of your three and let me know why that might be somebody worth.
The first guy is one of the three pitchers I've been hammering the most this offseason. He was the only one that qualified for around 350. He's technically 349 since February 1st. On NFBC, so I technically broke the rule on that. Fine. When I saw that, I was like, I have to put him there. So on the season last year, Christian Javier, he finished the year with a 3.55 ERA, 1.18 WHIP, 30.7% strikeout rate, and a 12.5 walk rate in 101 and a third innings. But one of the reasons I really like Christian Javier is because of his slider. It looked unhittable. It had a minus 10 run value, a 0.98 xBA against, and a 49% whiff rate. Also had a 0.155 wOBA and 9 hits on 483 sliders thrown. And just today I tweeted out, these are the starting pitchers that faced greater than 100 batters last season, had a minus 10 run value on their slider, and kept their pitching usage of that pitch sub 30%, because we know how much sliders can weigh on pitchers' arms, and we want to not throw too many if we want the longevity part of the game here. So these are the starting pitchers that had those feats. Max Scherzer, Lance McCullers, Carlos Rodon, Joe Musgrove, Zach Wheeler, Shohei Ohtani, Casey Mize, Garrett Cole, and Christian Javier. So that's nine starting pitchers that fit that criteria. Christian Javier was on that list. So just in short, obviously the slider is a great pitch, but besides just the slider, there's other things in his profile I really like. Right now, you could expect maybe luck going more his way next year as far as left on base percentage. He had it 83.3% last year, and that's far above what you'd expect mostly for the norm right now. I would expect that to regress closer to the lower to mid-70s. That's according to a lot of the projection systems over on Fangraphs, so I think that will obviously decrease his ERA some. And one of the big things that people noticed about Javier last year was he started the first nine games of the year. And then when they became overloaded with starters, he moved to the pen. And that was part of also the reason because he struggled with his fastball command. He was walking with too many batters. He was ineffective against lefties. So one of the things I was researching about him was that the pitching coach, Brett Strom, said that he was speeding up his delivery too much. And what he needed to do is he was letting his momentum pretty much just take him through the plate and he was missing his spots. So basically tried to slow him down a little bit. And just being really careful to try to throw those strikes. And that's something that you saw as he finished out the year, for the most part, with a better performance. And anytime a pitcher has two double-digit swing strike rate pitches, his four-seamer at 12%, slider at 19.6%, I think he's the type of guy right now that he's going so low because you would expect he's not going to start the year in the rotation, but he's one injury away from hopping in. And that's why you can get him at 350. Get some good ratios if he's coming out of the pen. And then if he's starting because of an injury to McCullers or Verlander, which are very realistic possibilities, he's right there giving you good innings. I'm a Christian Javier guy, Adam, and I think everybody should be too.
There you go. Yeah, he's been, surprisingly, his ADP has been rising, or it's been getting later. He's been getting picked up later as draft season goes on. You go back all the way back to like early, you know, in November drafts, I love this aspect of the NFBC player pages and you can see where a player has been picked all draft season long. But he was going on a regular basis around 230 to 250, 247, 270. And you know that these November drafts are all draft and holds, maybe a couple best balls thrown in there, but they're almost all draft and holds. So they're standard non-points format. And then as we go on, once we hit January, it hits his peak. I mean, you can get him at 388, 408, 392. now with all these different drafts that we're seeing mixed in with the online championships and the draft champions, so you have a mix of fab leagues and draft and holds and what have you, in the cut lines even, he's going a little earlier. So there's a lot of 242s, a lot of around the 280 range. I grabbed him in the triple players ball in the 21st round, middle of the 21st round, in the early 300s. So I like the pick. Obviously, I picked the player, and it's not the first time this draft season I've drafted him. But I will say, yeah, you might have cheated a little bit. His ADP might have been 349. I don't think you're getting him with your last pick in a standard fab league in round 30. That's just to say, you probably need to jump him up a round or two and not take the chance of, you know, getting him at the last pick. Because I'm in completely agreement in the fact that this is a guy who could start in the rotation. And even if he doesn't, there's a very clear path to innings. And even if he is the long man in the reliever role, he's going to provide you with quality stuff and quality production that, like, a Colin McHugh did last year, Brent Suter did in the first half. So it's not somebody who's going to hurt you, and the lottery ticket is totally worth it here. That's the thing about this segment. Almost all of these players that we talk about, there's never like a wrong answer. It matters what you've built up until that point on your team. And that kind of leads me to my two options. And I wouldn't necessarily pick both of these guys in the same draft. And that is two prospects in St. Louis, Nolan Gorman or Juan Yepez. And these are guys I've been targeting them most draft season as well in different areas. Obviously, if I need a second baseman or possibly an infielder in general in Gorman, who could end up moving around, and Yepez, who's available at first base, but everybody expects him to be more of a DH type of role. And that's where a lot of the question marks rolled around him. Now, with the answer that we've heard from Manfred, one of the only, you know, positive things we've heard come out of his mouth this offseason is that we will be getting the universal DH, or all expectations are, even from him, that they'll be getting the universal DH in the National League. Both these guys have a much more clear path to getting the jump up from AAA, and they both put up over 300 plate appearances in AAA with added plate appearances in AA last year. They both played a full season. They both played in the Arizona Fall League last year, the finishing school, if you will, for the older prospects. And they both can make a big impact on your lineup if they have a strong spring training and they find their way into the St. Louis Cardinals starting lineup, whether that be Gorman at second base, bumping Tommy Edman back into the outfield or to more of a utility positional player. And yet as a full-time DH, for that matter, because I don't think anybody's expecting him to be playing anywhere except for DH, especially with Goldschmidt at the helm at first. I picked Gorman in my last 12-team Fab League, our fifth On the Wire listener league. He was Mr. Irrelevant. I had the first overall pick, so of course I get the last overall pick. And he was Mr. Relevant for me in that one because I needed a backup second baseman and somebody who might even be able to jump up. The other thing that I thought about is the fact that, of course, the rules in NFBC are, if you're a prospect, if you're not on a major league team at the start of the season and you weren't drafted, you can't be picked up in Fab until you make your appearance at the major league level. And so this gave me the opportunity to pick a prospect who, even if I end up dropping, at least I know he's back in the pool. And if I want to grab him on the cheap later on, but before I think he might get called up, of course, that gives everybody the opportunity to do that as well. But in a pinch, I know he's available. I won't have to wait until he makes a debut, where a guy like Gorman, with the name recognition and the power production that he's put up, he'll be like the Yordan Alvarez type of fab purchase that you're going to see in season. So I was trying to get ahead of that as well. If I needed a first baseman, I would have went Yepez as well. I've got plenty of shares of Yepez in my draft and holds that I've done throughout the course of the offseason. So these are guys in situations that I'm more apt to grab at the last pick, especially since those are two guys you are going to be able to get in the 30th round, especially in the 12-teamer.
Yeah, and I think what's really cool is if you get them there, then when that big fab period does come, you don't have to worry about breaking the bank for them. You have them stashed just for that reason. I know people will do that, what you saw with Jared Kelnick's before, and guys that had those types of profiles that you're like, you know what, I'm just going to stash them and hold them until they get called up because I don't want to be the one that doesn't get to use them when they come up. So I totally get that. for sure.
You have to be careful, though. You do have to be careful. And I fall into this trap all the time. You've picked too many of these types of guys, mm-hmm. and you run out of bench spots. Last year, I want to say it was TGFBI, but it was one of the Fab Leagues I did on FBC. And I drafted a Shane McClanahan, and seemed like a great idea. He wasn't there right at the start. So I ended up, I think I dropped him either first week or second. And I ended up being really, I felt really good about myself because I picked up Logan Gilbert a week prior to his call up. So somebody had drafted him and dropped him. So I'm like, oh, great. I'll get him for a buck. And that was awesome. But then, of course, I lost out on McClanahan and what he put up the whole season. And so it's give and take. You have to, it's a balancing act, and it's not for everybody because you can make those what ends up being mistakes and you can kick yourself for it. And if that's not the way you want to manage your team, then it's obviously not the player you want to be targeting. All right, you got a couple other guys on your list, a couple other hitters, and I'm going to let you talk about both of them because there's one that definitely stands out to me, and I would want to hear your take.
Okay, I'm interested to see which one it is. So the first one, Lorenzo Cain, he's going pick 429 since February 1st. This is a player that in under 300 at-bats last year, he gave you a 256 average with 8 homers, 75 combined runs and RBIs, 13 stolen bases, and a sub-17% K percentage. This with by far the lowest BABIP of his career last season. I know sometimes people are like, oh, he's getting slower, the BABIP will go down. But it went down a little bit more than I thought it would last year. And I think that there's a chance it could go up a little bit more. He's projected by Roster Resource right now to be the center fielder for the Milwaukee Brewers. But now with the DH implemented, it's, you know what, if they're concerned that he can't go out in the outfield, they got the DH right there for him if he needs a day off so he can still hit. I think he's a 15-15 player, better than league average, batting average. And ultimately, again, he's still walking at a decent rate, 9.1 clip. I think that after pick 400, this is somebody, especially if you're playing in a five outfielder league, that you can have on your bench to put in as like your sixth or seventh outfielder. I think this is an insane value for him. So I love Lorenzo Cain right here.
Actually, at first glance, your other player was the one I was more interested in, but that as soon as you start talking about Cain, I'm like, oh, all these things started clicking with me. And the main thing that clicked with me is the fact that we had Matt Williams on the show last week, and his player in this segment was Tyrone Taylor. And one of the main reasons he likes Tyrone Taylor is that Lorenzo Cain is going to miss time, and Tyrone Taylor is going to get his at-bats. And so I think it's a fun juxtaposition that you ended up picking the guy that Matt was specifically calling out as the person who's going to give Tyrone Taylor more at-bats. Now, I agree that the DH in the National League helps this situation. I think Milwaukee is a tough one, though, because they have so many players that would benefit from moving into that position. I definitely don't see the Brewers being one of those teams that utilizes the DH for one person. I think that they will be the type of team, like you mentioned with Cain, they'll give Cain an opportunity at DH a game or two during the week, especially if he needs a little bit of rest from being out in the field. Obviously, Christian Yelich is going to have to steady that back somehow, and maybe that is not playing the outfield every single day. Of course, you have Rowdy Tellez, who would be a much better DH in general. So they have a couple of options. Kesson Hira, probably better in that position if he can actually start hitting again. So I think that it does provide opportunity for Cain along with Taylor and all these other guys to share the load there.
Yeah, and I think one of the things, that reason I liked him is when I looked on Roster Resource, Tyrone Taylor, they have him slotted at DH right now. But you look on at least at their projected bench, it's Pedro Severino, Mike Brasu, Kesson Hira, and Jace Peterson. So there's not like a strong outfield candidate, at least, you know, projected right now to take away at bats from Cain. It's not like they have two guys that I'm like, oh, they could plug in there, and especially if they're platooning or certain matchups. And Cain's a guy that I can see right now. They have Colton Wong, top of the order, but Lorenzo Cain's hitting well, and he's somebody that is a good veteran present at the top of the lineup. I don't know him necessarily that eighth spot in the lineup that they project sticks. And so I could see him also moving up towards the top of the Brewers lineup if he's hitting better. And I just think, again, the potential, I wouldn't be in on him if he was going inside like the top 200 or something, but going pick 427 just for the fact of what he seems like when he's healthy, what he can give you is something that I have no problem drafting.
Yeah, the Brewers put him at the top of the lineup for the first like 2 months of the season last year. He was batting first, second, third, all the way through until his injury, really, until he started missing time at the end of May. And who's to say that he won't get that opportunity as well? I would venture to guess that Brousseau is going to be that multi-positional, flexible guy they traded for. Mm-hmm. They traded from Tampa Bay to get him. I would expect him to be that fill in pretty much anywhere. I would expect him multiple position eligibility if he doesn't have it already. So you're right. I don't see a quote outfielder on that bench as it's currently constructed, but it is nice for them to have their Tyrone Taylor as their fourth outfielder in the DH spot, as Roster Resource says. Talk about the last guy on your list.
So Kyle Isbell. So those that might not know, he's a prospect in the Royal system. He's played some in the majors already. He's going pick 570 since February 1st. And in the last 55 games that Isbell played in AAA, his strikeout was only 17% compared to 22% in the first half of the season. He also batted 100 points higher over those last 55 games. He has a great combination. He's got power and speed. He hit 9 homers and 10 steals in the last 55 games he played. And at the big league level, he could potentially have the tools he needs as basically, if you look, the 16 games he played with the Royals last year, a 286, 362, 524 line, 886 OPS, and he's got defensive versatilities. He can play every position in the outfield. And right now, it's looking like he most likely will go in right because Michael A. Taylor, I think, will go in center. But again, being able to play all the outfield positions, so the defensive versatility is going to help him. He's somebody that I think has 12 to 15 stolen base upside, could potentially give you double-digit home runs. If you tell me I have a guy that could give me double-digit homer and steals and I can get him towards pick 600, please. Like, this is somebody that you can draft at the very end of your draft. And if you're hurting for some stolen bases, you need a guy that's going to give you consistent at-bats. This is, again, a really good value pick for me.
Yeah, this is somebody we hyped up a lot at the beginning of last season. And of course, that burned us because he got sent right back down right at the beginning of the season after we told everybody to pick him up, teach their own. He's no Edward Olivares. He didn't get sent up and down 15 times, which with the possibility, the suggestion of one of the things I guess the owners are putting out there is the possibility of only being allowed to send somebody down to the minors 5 times in one season. As everybody's already joked on Twitter, and I will echo it, the happiest person in the world on that is obviously Edward Olivares. Yeah. God, it was amazing. See, the thing is, Olivares has been my pick this offseason to, like, I mean, they can't do that man any worse this season. Like, he's gonna be up, but not everybody agrees with me. So Kevin mentioned Isbell a couple of weeks ago as well. I think that there's definitely some, and he's the in-house Royals beat reporter, if you will. And so Isbell's a good pickup here, at least somebody to keep an eye on. But that's, again, that's the beauty of these picks. It's you can make that pick now, hope he has a really strong spring training, and then he locks down an everyday role. Obviously, you're going to be more interested in somebody like Isbell who doesn't quite have an everyday role in a 15-teamer, less so than in a 12-teamer where you have more flexibility to pick up somebody of equal value off the wire. But to your point, like, if he can hit, though, if he hits, not like the literal sense, but if the pick hits, he could be worth it in any size league. And he can put up those stats that you need, especially late in a draft, if you're going to make up for those stolen bases.
I'm definitely now, anytime I see Edward Olivares' name, I'm associating it to you. So yeah. If I see he gets demoted, I'm going to be tweeting at you. Like, did you see this?
That poor man, like, he gets out of the taxi, he gets into the stadium, he takes an at-bat, he tells the taxi just to wait at the door, and he gets back in and just drives right back to Omaha. It's been, it was a wild ride for him last year. Nobody could not feel bad for the man. He's just like, all right, racking up the mileage. All right, now we're going to talk about some other hitters that we're specifically looking at to stream throughout the course of the season. And I'm going to pick your brain, Mandy, about how we go about doing that. Like, what you're thinking about when you're choosing to stream hitters and not so much pitchers. But before we do that, we're going to take this quick break.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, so we're back, and like I mentioned before, we are going to be talking the majority of, or the rest of the way here, talking about hitters that we like to stream, or the idea of streaming hitters, to whether it's to gain extra stolen bases, to play matchups, if you need a power surge. And a lot of people end up doing this in the last 2 months of the year. But really, if you're playing April the same way you play September, you can maximize the amount of plate appearances you're putting forth, rack up the counting stats, and hopefully not do anything to damage your ratio, your batting average, or your OBP, depending on the league format you're playing in. But before we get into that specifically, Manny, let's get your take on what is your overall fab strategy typically, not specifically about hitters, but just what do you, when you're going into a fab league and you're playing the weekly fab game throughout the season, what are the targets that you're specifically looking for? Are you thinking about fab while you're drafting, or are you using fab as more of a way to fix, you know, problems that your draft caused you, or is it just filling injuries? Talk to me about how you view fab and how to use it.
A little bit of all the above, like what you said. I obviously, when I'm during my draft, I'm not necessarily thinking about it too much, but during the season, I'm looking to use it to plug in holes, because sometimes I don't know how my team's going to play out until the season starts. And if you draft, an example, maybe you draft Giovanni Gallegos and Alex Reyes is the closer. And you're like, oh, shoot, that was a bunch of saves I thought I had right there. And now I'm going to actually be struggling in the category. So I got to go find a closer. And remember, everybody remembers the whole Jordan Romano, Julian Merriweather thing. And everybody right away was going to go for that closer. And I found throughout the years, I try not to overspend like as a fab strategy. And I've heard people like talk about averaging it out. This is what you should spend per week. And the first year I had fab, it hurt me because I tried to fix too much too quickly and picked up guys that weren't useful for me for the stretch run that I thought would be. So next year I did a lot better with that. But I think overall I use it to fix problems and to address positions, or, you know, address needs that I didn't get in the draft that I'm seeing play out during the season. But I'm trying to not overspend, and I'm not trying to be like, oh, this is the weakest, I'm going to throw a third of my fab on this guy because he's going to fix everything for me. A lot of times it doesn't work out. So just be very smart with how you spend. And a lot of times, especially too, if you wait out until later on in the season when people haven't spent as much, then you can easily outbid guys for players that are going to fill that role. So a lot of things I've learned along the way with that.
Yeah. And of course it matters on how active your league is. Mm-hmm. Like me and Yancey were texting the other day, Yancey Eaton, and we were talking about how funny it was. We were in an OCQ, we were in an online championship qualifier last year together, and there was a stretch run toward in August, even not even September, where we were the only two people bidding for 3 or 4 weeks straight. It's like there were nobody else bidding in this league. Like, what is going on? It's like people just check out. They just check out. They forget. Stuff happens, especially, and I'm guilty of this in one of my Fantrax leagues, because it was the old last year I had one league on Fantrax and a bunch of leagues on NFBC. So all my attention went to the league, the format that I had all the teams on. And I literally would forget to place bids on my Fantrax league. And the same thing would be true if you only have that one. I think this is a reason why we hear some criticism about players who play on TGFBI kind of checking out early, because there's a lot of players in TGFBI that's the only league they have on the NFBC format. And so as important, as fun as that league, it's really easy when you only have one league on one format, but you have multiple leagues on other formats to forget about it. So be aware of how the awareness of the rest of the teams in your league and how active they are. That's obviously really important as well.
No, 100% agree. And there's a good point with the fact of if you have one team on one league or one team on one format and you're like, I'm forgetting to check that totally. I write my leagues down, but I still, like last year, I remember just like I had a lot of, it was the first year being in the industry for me like doing like where people were asking me to join leagues, and I joined way too many. I overcommitted. And before I knew it, I was in like, I think I was in 18 last year. And I just was like, I found myself, even though I had every league written down, like something comes up on that Sunday and I'm doing this and I'm checking and I'm just like, I remember on Tuesday, I'm like, I forgot to do my FAB for this week and all the good guys are gone. And I'm like, it just got to a point where I was a little overwhelmed and I was like, you know what? There are certain leagues that matter a little bit more than others. I'm going to make sure I check those. And then the ones that are a little bit more relaxed, I'm just going to have to take an L. And I'm just going to drive myself crazy trying to like do this for all these leagues. And that's something you just make sure everybody does too. Don't do too many FAB leagues to where you're going to feel overwhelmed and it make you not enjoy doing it, because it definitely can weigh on you some.
I will say though, on the NFBC platform, if you're doing multiple FAB leagues, if you're going to pick a platform to do multiple FAB leagues on, that's the platform.
100% agree.
Just the way that you can pick and choose your watch list and be able to move around your FAB bids, it's just, it's really, I won't say easy, but it's easier to manage all those. And I think this year I'm going to have 4, maybe 5 FAB leagues when it's all, it'll be five FAB leagues when it's all ended. But sorry, I'll have 6. 5 of them will be on the NFBC format.
That's the way to do it, right?
And I still got 1 on Fantrax that I'm going to have to. And it's a dynasty league, so I really have to pay attention. And to echo your first, I hate fabbing for closers. And we talk about it all the time. It's like, yeah, you can pick and choose, try to get the reliever. And me and Kevin talk about this all the time. Like, you want to obviously get the closers before they become closers, get them a week or two early. But like, that, it's just a lot of work and a lot of, and I don't mind doing the work per se, but like, I've got other fish to fry when it comes to filling holes in my roster and how I want to use my roster spots. So we see all these closers going higher in second, third rounds in drafts this season. And I don't mind it. I don't personally mind it. I'm going to pay up for at least 1 or 2 of them, depending on the league format, but I don't want to have to go searching. And I know there's nobody's guaranteed anything in closers, but I'm going to pick the one that has the least amount of risk and run with it, so I'm not having to do that work during FAB season.
No, I agree. If you have that stability locked down, which it stinks that closer pushed up as much as they are this year, because you're like, I'm spending a second or third round pick on a closer. Oh my God. Like, it used to be like the 5th, 6th round.
Oh yeah. You knew the run was going to happen in the 5th round.
Yeah.
It's just, that's where it's going to start. I can wait there. I'll be happy whoever I get. The thing is, it's supply and demand, right? There's only 7 guys. Now, maybe in mid or late March, as spring training rolls around and maybe some announcements are made about bullpen usage from managers and what have you, we'll start seeing that price go down because the supply will also go up and people will be willing to wait. And if everybody's willing to wait, then even the Hendricks and the haters will go down and everybody will get pushed down. But there's still going to be that run. And as soon as like Class A goes off the board as the 3rd guy, or Iglesias, whoever your number 3 is, you better be in the middle of that or you're still going to end up missing out on that position. All right, so when you have a hole in season, then, like, by the way of injury, demotion, change of role, whether it's somebody moving into a platoon, maybe they're moved to the bench, what have you, is your first thought to stream that hole with a new piece each week? Or do you attempt to find a long-term piece so that, again, like we're talking about with closers, you're not worrying about it each and every week?
I would love to find the long-term piece for sure. And that's always like my gut, especially if you see someone called up and you're like, okay, like this, they're going to have him there for a while, but it never ends up being that easy. And so I find myself, I'm okay with streaming guys if I know, hey, this is like going to be a short-term thing. Oh, they're platooning a bunch of guys this week, or they're facing a pitcher where I think he's going to platoon a lot. I'm okay with that. I'll look, you know, at the upcoming schedule, who's hot, and try to throw a little bit of FAB on guys here and there. There was, I remember, like Tommy La Stella last year had a decent stretch, I'm pretty sure. And I remember getting him for $8 and wrote him out for a couple of weeks. Like, I want the long-term solution, but very rarely can you find guys that for the rest of the year are on there, especially as you get later on in the season. Because the early surprises, people pick up early and then they have them. And then as you get later on, those type of guys just fewer and fewer. So you're finding short-term solutions at that point. Guys that have favorable pitching matchups or platoon splits or whatever the case may be. So long-term for sure, but I'm okay being active and making sure I stream the right guys in the right situations as short-term as well.
Yeah, I think I'm more apt to stream early on in the season than I am because I want to be flexible. I want to be able to have that roster that has the ability to take on the hot hitter that can then maybe stretch it out, the Adolis Garcias of the world, if you will, like, and they come out of quote nowhere and all of a sudden you had the ability to bring them on early because you were just wanted to see how they were going to do, and they gave you a reason not to drop them. But my intention would be to stream them. Like, all right, let's come on and see how you do, and kind of play it by ear, earn it. You have to earn it every single week, earn not being cut. And if you keep doing that, great. It turns into that long term solution that we just mentioned. But I'll be more flexible early on in the season, and I'm going to be more apt to drop somebody if they're not just continuously raking. Just so make sure I get the next one. And you're going to miss out on some, of course. You're going to miss out on somebody's going to go through a cold spell after you drop them or as you're dropping them and then come back, and you'll probably miss out on them. Sure. But I think giving yourself more, how I feel is I give myself more flexibility, and I feel more strongly about the ability to get the next one up rather than having to eat those cold spells as well. Like I mentioned earlier, I'm all about managing your team the same way in April or similarly in April than you would in September, because those stats count just as much. Anything you can do to give yourself that edge in the amount of play appearances that you're seeing and racking up those counting stats, I think that's really important. But we are going to be talking about streaming hitters later on specifically. So when you are looking to stream a hitter, whether it be for a certain position or a certain stat line or a certain stat category that you're looking for, what are you looking for? What kind of a hitter are you looking to bring on, whether it be because of the matchups they have coming on, their style of play, a new skill set that they've shown? What are the things or a certain stat that you're looking at, like a end-all be-all stat that, hey, this guy is doing this A, B, and C. He needs to be on my team.
I think it's like all the above, to be honest with you. I think we have so many tools that we can utilize now. You know, there's people that specialize in certain areas, and Twitter is such a great tool because you'll have people that are way smarter than me that also be like, hey, they're like, since this guy eliminated the leg kick, he's hitting 308, 417, 516 slash, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like that's over an 11 game stretch. It really seems like they changed something. So I'll look at that. The DFS guy in me, because I play a lot of DFS. I look at WRC plus as over a hitter over the last few weeks to see kind of who's hot. If you see that the team is facing horrible pitching staff, like if I see a team's facing the Pirates and I'm like, okay, like they're playing the Pirates for four games. Yeah, let me look at some of these hitters. Or if someone's like a Jock Peterson and you see him, he's going again as a lefty, he's going to get a bunch of righties where he hits most of his home runs. I'll, you know, look to pick up Jock Peterson that week. I think, again, at the end of the day, you have to, if you want to be really successful, you have to be able to be open to all the tools that are at your disposal with how much stuff is out there right now. Find guys that you trust on Twitter that you know are going to put good stuff out as far as recent trends and things you should do. Find good tools like websites that have the information that you can get, like FanGraphs, Baseball Savant. All that stuff is available to you. You just got to spend the time to look the stuff up. Then you can bookmark it, and then you can look every single week at these stats and these changes. And you can be on top of everything. So very important to use all these tools.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not so much using all the tools. It's finding the tools that help you the most. Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned, there are a lot of people, and you said it nicer. You said there are a lot of smart people on Twitter. I'm just going to say there are a lot of people on Twitter. And so you don't, necessarily have to follow everybody, and if that means I lose a follower or two, that's fine. But like, if somebody's not providing you with substance and that's why you're on Twitter, now there's a lot of reasons to be on Twitter, and that's fine. A lot of people use it for entertainment, a lot of people use it to communicate. That's all good reasons, but do know that you don't have to follow somebody for the sake of following them, because you are then watering down the information that you're being provided. And maybe at first you need to figure out who those people are or what those tools are that help you the most, whether it's a certain website or whether it's a certain analyst that specializes in certain things. Like, we had Mike Curlin on at the beginning of last season because specifically, like, he did such an amazing job doing the lineup tracker throughout spring training and then into the regular season. It was just a really good tool to see what was going on in the minds of managers throughout spring training, and hopefully predict what was going to happen in April. So knowing the tools that will help you the most and not just specifically looking for anything and everything, because you're going to spin your tires in a lot of situations. I know I have in the past. Let me ask you this last question before we get into some player debates, not debates, but player discussion. Are there, when you are looking to stream hitters, Do you think that there's, especially going into this current draft season, do you think that there's going to be a position that is easier, quote unquote, to stream than others? And does that impact your type of draft strategy, depending on if you're a 12-team or a 15-team or deeper or even more shallow?
Yeah, I think there's like more position scarcity. And so sometimes I keep an eye on that. Like, I know that right now that there's a huge drop off at third base. And so I'm like, probably not going to be a good chance of finding too many streamers in 15-team leagues that are going to be relevant for you. So I like maybe not rely too much on trying to stream that position. But like outfield, there's always so many outfielders. And so I'm like, if you don't find one that you love right now, I'm sure you'll have some opportunity to grab some as the season goes along. My second catcher, I always make sure I have a decent first catcher, even if it's not like Salvador Perez. But you know, if I don't have a second catcher that I love, like in the triple players ball right now, my two catchers are JT Realmuto and then a guy we're going to get to in the next section, MJ Melendez. And I'm like, when Melendez comes up, I think he's going to be well worth a catcher too. But it's going to be finding somebody that I can just plug in, somebody like a Victor Caratini or somebody like that, or somebody just that I'm like, he's going to, you know, get 2 or 3 days a week. He's going to hit. It's not going to be anything special. But I think catcher two is somebody that I've been okay with streaming and outfield mostly, just because I think that stuff is pretty easy as far as the production, and that stuff is easier to replace than scarcer positions.
Yeah, I get the logic there. It's weird. I tend, at least going into this year, I'm actually starting to think of in the opposite way, where middle infield, for example, middle infield is, everybody says it's the deepest two positions in the drafts right now. And I said this a couple of times the last couple of episodes, but I'll say it again. Like, yeah, they're deep, but they're all really good, especially shortstop. Everybody's drafting all the best, all the starting shortstops, like all 30 of them for the most part, get drafted, whether it's as the starting shortstop or they have eligibility to different positions like a Trey Turner, except Javi Baez, and you're playing them at second base or outfield in the case of Tatis even. And I have a feeling like that's not going to be a position that I'm going to want or be able to stream regularly in season, because all the best ones worth picking up are on other teams. So at least in drafts, I've been focusing on making sure that my middle infielder is a shortstop, for example, NFBC leagues that have a corner and a middle infield position. To your point on your second catcher, I would turn that back onto third base. And if I don't have a third baseman that I feel really strongly about, that maybe that's the position that I'm not going to, especially in a 12 teamer, maybe less so in a 15 teamer where the entire wire is a lot harder to maneuver. I might be more apt to stream or try to stream third base until I find somebody that I feel more comfortable with. Or maybe it's I make sure my corner infielder is a third baseman as well, so I have a little bit more flexibility in moving that guy into third base if my third baseman I drafted I wasn't too keen on. So something to consider as you're making these drafts and how you want to attack FAB. It's mm-hmm. something you do have to consider. And if you want to continue to attack the same position over and over again each week, or you want to be able to set and forget and not have to worry about it, you got to worry about that at the top end of your draft. So, you know, you might have to spend up on like an Austin Riley if you don't want to worry about third base, or make sure you maybe even double tap a couple of high end shortstops, or at least two guys who have shortstop eligibility. So if you want to get like a Gregory Polanco and a Javi Baez who mm-hmm. have multiple position eligibility, then you give yourself a little bit more flexibility in that realm when it comes to a fabbing during the season, if you want to stream those positions. All right, let's talk about some players. As you alluded to, we will talk about MJ Melendez in the first bit. So we're going to, I alluded to this on, we talked about this on Twitter, and we're going to start a new segment, at least when we're talking about streamers. I'm calling it ASK. It's Avoid Stream Keep. It's a play on a game that, this is a Pitcher Leaks podcast network show, so I will leave the name of the other game that everybody, I'm sure, can figure out off air. Anyway, we're going to talk about three players at a certain position, and we're only going to talk about catcher, corner, middle, outfield, and then multi-positional players, so utility players. So we've got five groups of players here to talk about. You're going to get three players. You have to choose for each of them. One of them you have to avoid completely. So you can't draft them. You have to pretend they're not even in the player pool. You can't pick them up all season. Another one you have The other one, you have to keep active all season. So they've got to be in your starting lineup. If you draft them, they're in your starting lineup all season long. No matter how bad they are, you're stuck with them. And then the last choice you have to make is somebody that you're willing to stream throughout the season, assuming that they're available on the wire. So he's a guy you think you might be able to pick up on and off the wire throughout the course of the season and hopefully be helpful. So let's start with catcher, as you alluded to. And all these guys in these groupings are going past ADP 350 in the NFBC 50s. So these are the 12-team draft and hold leagues on the NFBC format in the last month. So this is 40 drafts worth of data. So in the catcher, we have Yan Gomes, currently backup catcher for the Cubs at 357 ADP. Tucker Barnhart is going at 361. And then your boy MJ Melendez, who I have plenty of shares as well. But I want you to talk about this group because I promised Kevin I would stop talking about MJ Melendez. He's going currently in this format at ADP of 375.
Yeah. So I had to think a little bit of strategy with this because the keep and stream part of it, like you said, it's like stream him. Am I going to be able to get him on the waiver wire? And so I think ultimately I'm going to keep MJ Melendez. And for people that don't know, he's /288, 386, 625 with a 1.011 OPS over 123 games in AA and AAA last year, led the entire minor leagues in home runs with 41. So he's somebody that I think is going to be special. He's going to be up with the Royals pretty quickly, maybe not right away on opening day, but I think within the first month, I wouldn't be shocked if he's up there. And the part reason I like him is because I think that you have Salvi, but Salvi can DH or go to first base. And with MJ Melendez, they can be like, all right, you're going to DH. So they have places they can put Salvi so Melendez can get at bats and consistently, especially with his profile is fantastic. So I don't want to trust that he's going to be on the waiver wire. I'm going to keep Melendez. I'll start him and maybe I'll take the L from my second catcher, which he's going to be at pick 375 or how late he's going over the last month or so, and keep him on my team. I'm going to stream Yan Gomes right now, the backup catcher to Wilson Contreras. But now with the DH there, Contreras can either DH more, especially because there's not a ton of great hitters right now in Chicago with all the trades they made. Or you could see Contreras get traded. And then you have Yan Gomes as a starting catcher for the Cubs, where he's going to get a lot of at-bats. And he's somebody that's a pretty safe player. You know, he's going to hit 240, 250, give you double-digit home runs, maybe like 10 or 11 homers, 40, 50 RBIs. I think a great catcher to target. Again, I would be shocked if Wilson Contreras isn't traded, so I think he's going to get a lot more bats as the season goes on. I think he's a great streaming guy. I'm avoiding Tucker Barnhart. It's the guy who struck out 25% of the time, which isn't horrible. It's a little bit under the major league average, but he only hit 7 home runs in Great America Small Park in 116 games last year. Now he's in Detroit, which is arguably the worst ballpark for home runs in the league. It's a 4% barrel percentage and slugged under 400 last year out on Tucker Barnhart, even at that price. So I'd rather get my other catcher somewhere else. So that's how I think I'd play out catchers.
Yeah, I like Barnhart a lot more in draft and holds because you know he's going to get the at-bats. He's going to be playing a regular. Like all these guys have a path to pretty good amount of playing time for the catcher position, right? Melendez, there's all these rumors, and we've brought it up before, that he could be playing. He could fill in at third base. He could fill in at first base. He could fill in, you know, anywhere that he's halfway comfortable at. And Kevin's not here. I don't want to speak for him, but he's already said these things, so I don't feel so bad. He doesn't see a path, or at least they have a lot of mouths to feed in Kansas City.
They do.
What I'm saying. Between the prospects that are coming up, between Bobby Witt competing for the third base job, and I know you're a fan of Bobby Witt. We've talked about him off air, and Melendez coming up, obviously doing what he did at AAA last year in the minors throughout the course of the season. And then Nick Prado at first base. And they've got other, I mean, never mind, Edward Olivares and Kyle Isbell, which was a whole different conversation, out in the outfield. And I tend to agree with you just because of the output that Melendez could put up. I would probably keep Melendez all season long. If this was a draft and hold, which is not what we're talking about, I would probably lean up for the safer bet of Barnhart. Even though he's not going to produce the possibility of what Melendez does, I do know he's going to be there every day. I mean, he's going to be working with those pitchers. He is a defensive catcher. And if he gets even more playing time, though, he could still at least walk himself into more counting stats. But this is not what we're talking about. But I might end up streaming Barnhart over Gomes just because I know he's going to be available throughout. If Gomes walks into a trade, Wilson Contreras, Gomes, somebody's going to pick up Gomes and he's going to be their starter and they're not going to drop him. Simple as that, because of the production he could produce with full-time catcher one playing time. Barnhart, I know I'll be able to rely on him in case of an injury being available when I need him on the wire. So for that reason, I might end up going that route, but that's more of just the what's going to be available on the wire at the catcher position more than actual production. All right, we're going to move over to corner infield. Of course, first baseman, third baseman. The guys here I have listed here fit the same mold where you have somebody that's, you don't know what their playing time is going to be. They might benefit from a DH. Another guy who's just like this steady guy that what you're going to get. And then a prospect on here as well. So Eric Hosmer at 360, Mike Moustakas at 361 right behind him. And then Jose Miranda of Minnesota at 377. And I will put it to you first. I've got some thoughts here, but I'm curious to know, because I kind of chose these players obviously in the same realm, 360 to 377 ADP, but also in the same kind of makeup as the catchers. As mentioned, like somebody like Mike Moustakas, who's been injured all last season, but now is going to, you know, probably benefit from a DH spot in Cincinnati. Eric Hosmer, who, again, you just know what you're going to get if he's still given the opportunity to do it in San Diego. And then Jose Miranda, who needs, there's room for him to go, but if he gets it, all the projections really what he could possibly do. So what direction are you going with these guys?
My void was easy for me. It was the question of who I would keep and who I would stream. I think ultimately it would change on like how I built my team between the two up top, but for right now I'll say I'm going to keep Mike Moustakas. He's a guy that's hit 30 or more home runs 2017, 2019, like you mentioned. Now it's going to DH, which I think is going to do incredible things for him. Him not having to play defense in the field and risk further injury, him just having to be able to hit every day. And we always talk about sometimes playing defense sometimes takes you out of mentally hitting. If you make an error in the field or something like that, in fact, he can focus just on hitting. I think he's an easy 20 plus homer, 70 RBIs. Should hit about league average batting average wise. Doesn't strike out as much as you may think. He's actually had 22 or less percent strikeout percentage his entire career. So I think he's somebody that's going to be a great late third base option. That's where he's eligible at right now, that I think I'm going to keep and reap that benefits all season. I just drafted him in the triple players ball. I think he's a great target.
Yeah, so did I.
Oh, did you? Oh, there we go.
In league two, but yeah.
We're on the same page there. I'm going to keep Jose Miranda. The upside he has is so tantalizing.
Oh, no, you kept Moustakas.
Or I'm sorry, stream okay. Jose Miranda. You look at the upside he has. First of all, he's got extremely great position versatility. He played last year. This was going into the end of August. He had done 13 at games at first base, 20 at second, 39 at third, and 3 in left field. So he can play wherever the Twins would need him to go. And right now, you got Josh Donaldson at third base. He's got that locked up, you would expect. Alex Kirilloff is getting groomed for first. You have Miguel Sano locked at the DH. And then right now they like Polanco and Luis Arraez right now are in that middle infield mix. But it just takes one injury and he's there. And I think he could make noise if he gets that chance. And obviously with Josh Donaldson and his cranky calves, there's a pretty good chance, I think, that third base could easily open up for him if they were going to give him that spot there. I mentioned his positional flexibility and going to the last month of the season, he led all Twins prospects in home runs, runs batted in, and led them all in batting average, hits. And on top of that, he also had the most games played of all Twins prospects and plate appearances. I just think he's just fantastic. He's somebody that I'm okay with trying to stream if he like first gets called up and even gets come down. But that's why it was so tough between him and Moustakas for me. I think his upside is just so tantalizing. I want him some way, shape, or form. And then I'm going to avoid Hosmer. I don't think there's any upside for him at this point. He'll give you a 250, 260 average. He played in 151 games last year. I didn't look up the percentages of what that ranked in the league. He had 12 homers and 65 RBIs in 151 games. I those numbers for me in 151 games is just staggering that it could be that putrid. So I don't think he has the lowest upside for me. He doesn't really help you in one specific category if you're trying to draft late to help you in one area. And I think I know they're paying him a lot, so he's going to have to play. But ultimately, what kind of production are you really getting? So he's my avoid out of this list.
Yeah, I really wish I could disagree with you on this grouping because everybody likes to hear when people disagree. But I think you nailed it. Like I mentioned, I got Moustakas. He's on my reserve bench, but if he can show health, he's going to probably move his way into probably even my starting third base position, as I think drafted Matt Chapman as my starter there. So I could see him taking that role as long as health provided. Miranda, I definitely would have gone back and forth between Miranda and Hosmer as well. I might even say, I don't know if Hosmer just has enough name recognition, if you will, in a lot of leagues that he'd still be picked up regularly. I think he's probably worn out that welcome. Where Miranda, I think it's same kind of comments I made with Yan Gomes. If and when he finds his way into kind of even a semi-everyday playing time with the Twins, he's going to get picked up, and he's not going to get dropped again. He's going to be a hard guy to stream throughout the course of the season, unless he's just pitter-pattering around and he's just not putting up the kind of numbers that the projections are, you know, expecting out of him. So for that reason, I might, if I'm not going to keep Miranda, I think I would probably avoid him, just because I think Hosmer again would be easier to stream throughout the course of the season if I absolutely need it. Now, it's probably better if I had to only choose keep or avoid for Miranda, I'd probably keep Miranda for all that flexibility that he could provide you throughout the course of the season. As you mentioned, if he does fill in a multi-positional, if Arise ends up being that starting second baseman or even starting shortstop in the middle infield, and he doesn't bounce around as much and they put Miranda in that role instead, then Miranda becomes a lot more valuable in my eyes. So I think that was a good call out there as well. All right, and then as we talk about in the middle infield, Cesar Hernandez going at 356, of course, second baseman for the Nationals now. Nick Solak, second base eligible for the Texas Rangers at pick 387. And then Jose Barrero, prospect for the Cincinnati Reds, shortstop prospect at 399. And this is interesting for me because I am on the clock for the triple play ball right now. We are, our league is in, what were we, round 26. And Barrero is still there. So I'm actually looking at Barrero here. And I know this is a draft and hold, different than what we're talking about. But I am looking at Barrero. And I'm also looking at Jeremy Pena, who we talked about last week on the show. And I go back to what I was saying earlier about how shortstop's really important to me, especially depth. Because as soon as you get to this point in most drafts, if you're in like the middle 300s, who you're going to grab is not going to be somebody you're going to want starting for the most part. But Barrero, if he can actually get the starting gig in Cincinnati, and we've heard leadership and management in Cincinnati say Barrero is their future. Like, he is somebody they want to be part of their future, whether it's long-term or just even short-term on a regular basis. So I'm actually leaning toward keeping Barrero and just being that stash in a fab league. Of course, you can't stash too many because injuries do happen. You will end up having to drop somebody. So in this hypothetical scenario, though, I've got to keep him all year. And I do think he will end up taking the job, whether it's straight out of spring training or shortly thereafter. They can only manipulate, I think, his time so much going in because he already has made his debut. I probably would keep him. And I think that I think I'd end up streaming Cesar Hernandez because he just keeps getting underappreciated at every stop, whether it's in Cleveland or, granted, in Chicago, he didn't, you know, put up what he was putting up in Cleveland. And I'm also thinking you could stream Cesar Hernandez for both the newfound power that he's shown in his last, you know, half season in Cleveland and in Chicago. And then who's to say that he doesn't start running again? Like, he just stopped. Like, he was at least double digit stolen bases for years and years, and all of a sudden, zero. I'm not sure if that was injury related. I haven't looked into it as much, but I'd be curious to see if all of a sudden he just decides, hey, in this new spot in Washington, what else am I going to do? I might as well run a little bit as well. So I think I'd end up streaming Cesar Hernandez because I do think if I drop him, I'd be able to pick him back up in a pinch as well. And Nick Solak, I think I'm just out on Nick. So based on what he's done recently, I know he's a darling of the industry going into just last season. He also had the idea that he would gain multiple position eligibility going into last season was something that everybody's looking for. Even though he started last season at UT only, but everybody thought he was going to be moving around from outfield, second base, what, third base. He's not going to have that flexibility per se now. Now he's not going to play second base, so he probably will gain other eligibility in Texas going into this year, obviously with Semien playing there now and Seager playing shortstop. So be curious to see where he does end up going, but it's not a profile that I think I'd be worried about if somebody else wanted to grab him and reap any rewards that he might be given. What direction do you think you'd be going with this threesome?
I kept Cesar Hernandez just for the fact he's going to get everyday bats at Washington. He may not hit 280, 290 anymore. His BABIP, though, was really low. It was a career low last season. So I don't think that 230 average is indicative of what I think he's going to do this year. Maybe closer like 260, 270. Like you said, the power now, you could see he could hit 20 home runs with an everyday role there. And the reason I'm keeping him is I think if he's right now on the waiver wire, people are going to see he's getting everyday at bats and he's going to accumulate statistics to where he's not going to be a streamable guy, to where people are going to plug him in and be like, hey, I'm hurting. My second baseman went down. He's somebody that's a starting second baseman that's putting up pretty decent numbers. So I don't think he's somebody I'm going to be able to stream consistently. So that's why I'm keeping him. Nick Solak was somebody I decided to stream. And I know it's not like sexy, but he's a potential double digit homer and stolen base threat. And he's got a better lineup around him this year, so maybe his counting stats will go up more than they've been in the year past. And if I'm not mistaken, he's also second base outfield eligible as it stands right now. So he's got the positional flexibility. And then just looking into some stuff in his profile, so he's got a great career max EV, a good sprint speed for steals. So I think that potential is still there with him, and him having guys in the lineup that are going to get on base and produce. And that's something that intrigues me this year, just to see if he can take a step up. Having guys in the lineup with him, he can pick their brain too. I think sometimes just that, hey, like I'm spending some time in the cage, can just talking and learning from some of these guys. And then Barrero, I'm avoiding. If he comes up right away, great. Obviously, maybe he doesn't come up right away. But I've heard people talk about this, and it affects me with certain guys. I'm big on Bobby Witt, and I think he's made adjustments very quickly to each level he's gone to. People have talked about the gap between AAA pitching to major league pitching is the biggest it's ever been. And that's why, outside of the few like incredible stud prospects, I'm a little hesitant to want to keep a guy that hasn't had too much major league experience yet. And the time he was up there wasn't anything special. And I also, if I'm not mistaken, I heard that Kyle Farmer is going to be the starting shortstop for this team because of how great he is defensively there. And that would mean Barrero would be moving from his natural position to the outfield. And we've seen that sometimes if you're learning a new position, that can also affect you at the plate. So he's got potentially moving to a new position. He's got the biggest gap in facing major league pitching compared to AAA pitching. I think there's a lot of knocks against drafting him at this point. Not that he couldn't overcome all that, but I think the odds are more against him than the other two guys here.
You bring up a point. He did play center field in September in Cincinnati as well. And most of his experience came in the shortened 2020 season, of course. I mean, he put up decent numbers, but to your point, he put up good numbers in AAA, hitting .306 with a .336 BABIP and 13 home runs. But that was only 200 plate appearances throughout the course of the 2021 season at AAA. So that's not to say that he, to your point, all that experience is still at a lower level. I appreciate the insight there, because I think you've made my decision a little bit easier on this pick here. So we'll see who I end up. I saw the clock. We went with a 4-hour clock, so I've got lots of time. Whether my league mates are appreciative of me taking up that time or not is a different story. So
I think it goes down to 2 after round 30.
Round 30?
Yeah.
I think you're right. All right, on to the outfield. Obviously, a lot of outfielders to fill your 5 slots in a 5, you know, outfielder league like the NFBC format, and a lot of other formats really as well are going to a 4 or 5 outfielder roster construction. And so the deeper your league, the less opportunity there is. And I think we heard this a lot last season and how difficult it was, especially in a TGFBI with a 15-team league, how difficult it actually was to fill your outfield spots, especially if you had multiple injuries throughout. So Here's the threesome here, and I'll let you take the lead on this one. Jock Peterson, who still does not have a team yet, being drafted at 415. I think that number will change based on where he goes, just like last year when he signed that one-year deal with Chicago and the Cubs said specifically he would be playing every day. And that was obviously a big deal for those looking to get the added plate appearances. Whether or not those plate appearances against lefties was something good or not, that was a different story. And then you have Victor Robles at 413, just two picks prior to Peterson, trying to make his comeback with Washington. And then Josh Lowe in Tampa Bay, looking to make his reappearance at the major league level, going right after these guys at pick 420. So these guys are all going within seven picks of each other on average in these NFBC 50, 12 teamers. And how would you like to treat each one of them in our game here?
So I had to think about this one as well, and a little harder than the first couple. And I think ultimately I just decided on what they could bring me to the table. And I'm keeping Robles because I think right now with Washington not having many good outfield options right now, Lane Thomas and Juan Soto, we expect our locks, but you got Andrew Stevenson, Yadiel Hernandez. I'm not too sure either of them would stick in the outfield. And if Robles does anything near what his potential could be, then he could get a chance to produce the upside that's there, especially with the stolen bases. So I think I'll keep Robles and just stash him for the chance that he finally finds success. I'm going to stream Peterson, as we know the type of power he possesses. He crushes right-handers, had 16 of his 18 home runs last year against them, but he's the definition of streaky. So he'd be the guy on the waiver wire. I'm going to look what his matchups are, and I'm going to stream him those weeks when I think he has good matchups and I think I could take advantage of. And I'm avoiding Lowe.
This was Lowe.
It is Josh Lowe. Thank you. I always mix things up with the Lowe's and the Lowe.
It's just Brandon. Brandon's the only Lowe.
Yes. Okay. Actually, that helps me a lot. Brandon Lowe, Nate and Josh Lowe. Nate and Josh, brothers. He had 22 and 78 with 26 steals, 291 average last year in the minors. But the Rays platoon and mix and match so much that I wouldn't feel confident drafting him or even trying to stream him. They have so much depth on that team. I'm just not sure when the consistent at-bats are going to come. Obviously, again, the prospect side of it, it's like, hey, they have a lot of other options, major league guys that I don't think they're one of those teams that call up. You saw how long it took to call up Wander Franco, right? Like Vidal Brujan, all these guys. I just don't think I would count on him contributing to where I would want to stash him or I would expect to try to stream him. So I'll avoid him in 2022.
Yeah, I thought about this as well. My gut was, I actually wanted to Jock Peterson, and then I realized my own rules of this game were that if I keep him, I have to keep him active in my lineup all season long. And I don't think I want that out of Peterson, especially if he's going to be facing any lefties throughout the course of the season. So I think he is the perfect streamer. See, if I didn't have to keep him active, I probably would keep him and I would just keep him on my bench. I would just pick and choose when the best matchups were, especially in a daily league. That makes a whole lot of sense because he can still mash the opposite side of the plate as long as he's not facing those lefties that he doesn't do well against. But that's not the rules of this game. So I think that you're absolutely right. I think that there will be somebody in each league that will end up, especially if he signs somewhere extreme like Colorado or another paradise for hitters, especially now that there's a lot more DH spots available throughout the course of the league, that somebody's going to pick him up and just hold on to him for a long period of time and probably make a mistake in that realm. Because I really wanted to stream Robles for the stolen bases and those opportunities. This is something that I look for throughout the course of the season is stolen bases obviously are so hard to get in the draft unless you're really going gung-ho at the beginning of your draft, right? And mm-hmm. Or you're trying to get those rabbits later on in the draft that are going to hurt you everywhere else. I tend to try to look for the guys like Robles who either go undrafted, but can still steal a base or two and stream the stolen bases. This is one stat that I really like to try to stream throughout the course of the season, especially in daily moves. But you can still do this in weekly moves, especially in the NFBC, where you can switch out your hitters halfway through the week. So you don't have to, you can pick up a guy on the cheap, play him for the first four games and sit him for the weekend if the matchups aren't working out. But those aren't the rules. So I think I'm in agreement with you on keeping Robles. I don't like it though. Like I think that he could end up, and he's shown that he can do more harm than good. But if you grab him as your last pick in a draft, even though you do have to start him in this game, the draft cost is not going to hurt you. Mm-hmm. And I'm in full agreement with you on Josh Lowe. I picked up Josh Lowe a couple places at the end of last year, of course, only to see him not do anything a day or two later. And between him and Bruhan and pretty much every prospect that doesn't get a 20-year contract after his first season, you can't trust positional prospects in Tampa. Pitching prospects, that's a different podcast. But so I think I'm in agreement with you there. So let's talk about some multi-positional eligible players that can play all around the diamond, can fill in everywhere. But again, you got to keep one of them active in your roster all year round. Doesn't have to be at the same position. You can move him around, but he's got to be active. You got to avoid one of these guys, and you have the ability to stream the third one if they're still available on the wire. So we have Ha-Seong Kim, eligible at second, third, shortstop in the NFBC format at pick 360. You have Josh Harrison at currently available at second base, third base, and outfield at pick 376. And then Rougne Odor, second base and third base eligibility over in Baltimore at pick 415. I double checked. I did see that Nick Solak only has second base eligibility in NFBC. It looks like he actually only played second base last year, didn't actually play any other positions. But like I said earlier, he's going to gain probably outfield eligibility rather quickly, since he's obviously seeming is a workhorse and he plays every single day whenever possible. He's not going to get in at second base very often, if ever. So of those guys, I think Josh Harrison is the guy that I'm going to be keeping on my roster. And it has more to do with the fact that he has middle infield, corner infield, and outfield eligibility. So he has not only the three positions, but he also adds both the corner and the middle in position eligibility. So he has a lot more flexibility to move around and fill those holes without having to worry about spending the money on fab. He has the opportunity of putting up fine numbers that aren't going to really hurt you in any particular way, still getting everyday plate appearances, whether this is a fab league or draft and hold, doesn't matter. Like, you still want those extra at bats. I'm probably streaming Ha-Seong Kim, and that's mostly because of the extra positions that he does bring to the table. He has more flexibility in doing that. I see a cleaner path to playing time for him in San Diego with any one injury, as we talked about with other guys. It only takes one, and then they didn't bring him over and pay him all that money to not play him at all. And that's why he has three position eligibility going into the season. He played plenty of games at all these different positions because they did want him to get the time at the plate and get the time in that experience. To your point earlier, playing different positions that you're not used to playing, he played shortstop and he had to, it's not learned from scratch, but get comfortable at different positions throughout the course of the season while not playing every single day. And that can take a hit on what you do at the plate if you're focusing on all those other things that you're being asked to do. I don't think that's going to stop. I think he's still going to be asked to do these extra positions, but at least he has a year under his belt where he's had that ability to get more comfortable with that. And I talked sweet nothings about Rougne Odor last year, and I'm done with that. I probably am not looking at, or even in Baltimore, even doing what he could possibly do in the summertime at Camden Yards. I just think that there's too much opportunity for other players to take that playing time and for him to pretty much do nothing, that I think that even streaming him will probably do me personally in my mental case more harm than good. What direction are you going with these guys?
So just for the reason that Odor is right now the only one that's guaranteed to start. He's projected as the starting second baseman for the Orioles when I looked at like roster resource, that he's the opening day second baseman. And I know the dimensions have moved back some, but if he's getting every day at bats for the Orioles, like, that intrigues me enough. I know what he's capable of doing, like, for bad or for good. And so I was like, you know what? Like, look what Baltimore does for guys. Like, when they go to Baltimore, again, even with the stuff moved back, you seem like hitters thrive in Baltimore. I could see him being one of those guys that has a monstrous first half to the point where they trade him, because he's somebody that like hits 15 to 20 home runs in the first half of the season and is thriving in Baltimore. So I put him there for that reason. Again, an everyday job going after pick 400 is pretty nice. I'm going to stream Josh Harrison. He's got so much versatility and eligibility, position flexibility, which is awesome. I just think obviously the steals are there too. he's somebody that you know what you're going to get with him. But of course, the playing time is always something you're like, hey, is he just going to be the guy off the bench, utility guy? But again, the stuff he possesses, he's got a good batting average, stolen bases, position flexibility. I think he's a good stream guy. And then I'm actually avoiding Kim. So right now the BatX projects 10 homers, 40 RBIs, under 10 steals. He's also in a very competitive San Diego infield for at-bats. I know the DH is there, but do they really want to DH Kim? I just, right now with this late in the draft with utility guys, I would be looking for something that, someone that specializes in something. Odor, of course, has the power, and Josh Harrison has batting average and stolen base upside. I think the other two don't. And again, I wasn't impressed with Kim ultimately. So I think, again, if this is the year that Kim comes and does what people thought he would do last year, then it's not going to be, I won't have him. But I think the other two, I feel more comfortable with knowing that they can help me in certain categories that I might be struggling when drafting this late in the draft.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see where Josh Harrison ends up. I believe, yeah, he is a free agent. If he was still in Oakland, or if he goes back to Oakland, I actually be more, because of his profile, I'll be more interested in him just because of the average. And it is a very cavernous ballpark, but I don't have Josh Harrison on my team for any particular reason, whether it's streaming or drafting for the power. Like you said, there's some stolen base upside there. He's going to help, not even not hurt. He's going to help your batting average in most scenarios. The Odor thing, I think I'm just also holding out hope that Jorge Mateo actually comes through and pushes him out of that second base gig, because I see everything that you're saying about Odor, I say about Mateo, and he has that ability to come in, and if he takes over that role and runs with it, he could be the guy that gets traded. Now, they're holding on to him for a little bit longer. I don't think he's eligible. I think he's under team control for, I don't know, 2 or 3 more years, if I'm not mistaken. Though he's been under team control for 2 other teams, and it hasn't stopped them from trading him. So I don't think that he's really stuck in Baltimore for that reason as well. So I think I'm holding out hope for Mateo at second base, who's outfield eligible right now in NFBC, as he played all over last year, but not enough in any one position, except for obviously outfield, to gain it going into this year. All right. Well, I think these are good groups. These are guys you're going to be able to get late in your drafts. Again, whether you are looking to get them in your fab leagues as somebody as a dart throw, or you're still doing your drafts and holds, as Mendy and I talked about, the triple players ball is that draft champion style league, 50 rounds, 15 teamer. So we are well away. And you talked me out of Barrero, by the way. I ended up picking Jeremy Peña, who I have plenty of shares of already, and I don't mind getting an extra share, especially if he does find his way into the starting shortstop gig in Houston, if they don't end up signing somebody, which is the strongest rumor, as much as you can trust rumors at this stage of the year with no actual news coming out. We talked about it, Matt Williams, last week. Yeah, how are there rumors coming out when nobody can actually talk to anybody else? People are actually talking. So it'll be interesting to see what actually happens. Mandy, thank you so much, man, for filling in. We had you on the books for a long time, so this was the last second thing. It was just going to be you and me, but this was awesome to talk to you. And you did a great job in the pitcherless blind draft league that I helped proctor a couple of weeks ago. Hopefully that was fun on your end as well.
Yeah, it was a blast. It was an absolute blast. I was like, this is an awesome idea. And I loved being able to watch when you, I don't know who clipped like some stuff I said and some stuff our co-manager said, but that was genius. Like I loved it. I think you guys, it's so unique, and all you guys at Pitcherless are so awesome.
Well, shout out to Ben Brown and Miles Nelson, who put that, they clipped all that together, made all the GIFs, cut all the faces onto all the other pictures. If you haven't checked that out, it's on the Pitcherless YouTube channel, and you can go back and watch that. I believe my face was put on as a thank you for helping out, and I got one of the Sex and the City girls, I think, if I'm mistaken. I don't know which one I was. I got to go back and look. But I don't know how I would feel about any of them, since I don't really know much about the show, but I know it exists. But Mendy, thanks again, man, for coming on the show and playing this silly game with me. Could you remind everybody where they can follow you and anything specific that you're working on heading into, hopefully, spring training coming up soon? Pitchers and catchers will report at some point, and anything you might be working on that everybody should be keeping an eye out for.
Of course. Thanks for having me, first of all. It was a ton of fun just to go over all these different players and these scenarios and the ask. I love that segment that you guys have. So it was an absolute blast for me. So thanks again for having me on. And as far as following me and my work, you can follow me on Twitter at dmendio2. And I usually will tweet out fantasy stuff. I'll tweet out bad dad jokes. I'll tweet out smash or pass and some workouts here and there. So a lot of different things. And as far as my like written work, I just joined Fantasy Pros. So I'll be having a few articles start going out now, both football and baseball for Fantasy Pros. Also some baseball articles going out on Fantrax that you can check out as well. But that's usually where all my baseball work is, between Fantasy Pros and Fantrax as far as written. So check that stuff out there. There'll be a bunch more coming now that my coaching season in real life is coming to an end. So I'll have more written work for you guys.
Nice. What do you coach?
High school basketball. It's been an absolute grind the last few months.
Well, man, if it's coming to a close, hopefully it's coming to a positive close. Not sure.
Six and seven right now. So we're in the middle.
Well, man, this is awesome. And by the way, I'll clip that out. There's no such thing as a bad dad. As an actual dad with two kids, there's no bad dad jokes. They're just jokes. Okay. And they're amazing. And everybody should be using them whenever possible. Though some of the smash or pass things you put out there, I'm just like, I can't get behind some of these things, man. Like, some of the things you find on the shelf and you put out there, I'm just like, okay, maybe in a different stage in my life, it would be something like the cereals that you find, man.
Fantastic.
I eat like two cereals, and it's my kids are happy to have two different types of cereal, and that's it. And I'm like, I'm good with that. I don't need the variety anymore. But the dad jokes keep them coming. Also, the love for Dylan Cease, Bobby Witt, and Christian Javier is not unfounded on your Twitter feed as well. So if you're looking for somebody to back you up on those takes, make sure you're following Mendy on the Twitter. But thanks everybody for listening and joining us here. We're going to wrap it up for episode 47 of On the Wire. Please make sure to subscribe, share, and review to the podcast wherever you're listening, even if your review is just a general tweet and not a specific platform review. It still goes a long way to let us know what you think of the show and let others in on the fun. Make sure you're listening to all the great podcasts on the Pitcher List Podcast Network by following at Pitcher List Pods on Twitter for updates, and subscribing to both the Pitcher List Fantasy Baseball Podcast feed and the Pitcher List General Baseball Podcast feed as well for all our non-fantasy related pods as well. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. Kevin will be back with us next week. You can follow him in the meantime at HastingKevin. And once again, our guest, Dave Mendelson, is at DMendy02. Thanks once again, Mendy, for joining us. And on behalf of Kevin, I am Adam Howe. With that, we bid you goodbye.